On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we sit down with a World War II glider pilot who flew troops behind enemy lines on D-Day. Stay tuned. Warbird Radio Presents, The Guy Gunter Story, starts now. In the days before military helicopters, glider pilots reigned supreme. These were the guys that would take off without an engine, fly your troops to the front line, then fight their way out alongside them. Their stories are sadly all but forgotten. But thankfully, Guy Gunter lives today and was able to share a little of their silent missions. Here now is Guy Gunter.
I flew the Warco and I also flew the Horsa, but not in combat. We used the Warco primarily for combat, made in America by Kimball Piana, Seaburg, Milwaukee Brewer, and people like that. They were made out of steel, the frames were, and had fabric stretched over. The wings were made out of plywood and fabric. And they carried 15 troops, pilot, co-pilot. Would carry a Jeep or a trailer or 155mm out for invasions. We used them for invasions.
Now, you carried all this equipment and men behind you. And if you're in a glider, you're not often landing on an improved airfield. You're landing at some pasture beside the road somewhere. How do you keep that stuff from... That's got to be pretty dangerous coming up and running over you in the front there.
Well, not really. It's tied down, of course.
You hope.
Yeah. Excuse me. We never had that problem. Because we took care of that before we took off. We knew that.
You had much worse problems, though.
When you landed, if you had a Jeep with you, you were lucky. Because the Jeep, you could drive the Jeep out, and as you did, you released the latches on the nose section, and the pilot and the co-pilot had to get out first, but the nose would raise, and you'd drive the Jeep out, you see. So it was a pretty versatile unit. People didn't know what to do with it because they had nobody in charge and nobody had ever tried it before. And we were in the first class to graduate from Lubbock on November the 12th, 1942, and went overseas 45 days on the ocean and landed in Africa, actually in Egypt, and no gliders to fly. While we were there, no one knew, but we flew co-pilot on C-47s while we were there, and we finally got gliders in March of 43. And our first, and we trained the British glider pilots to fly our gliders in North Africa, and there's 36 of us volunteered to go in on the invasion of Sicily with the British, and 16 of us got back. And they called us next flight off because it was a little too hairy. And the tow pilots kind of cut us loose, so we had about half of the 140 gliders that went into Sicily land in the Bay of Syracuse. And the Greek destroyers picked us up the next morning. The gliders floated. We stayed on top of them, so we only lost part of the people. And after that, we had the invasion and D-Day, and then from D-Day I came back to southern Italy, northern Italy, for the southern France invasion. Then I went back to England for the Holland invasion, which was called Manhattan, I believe it was.
Saw a lot of action back then. Let's talk about the Normandy invasion. What was your role in that? Obviously dropping troops behind enemy lines, but you don't fly back out in a glider, so you're there too.
We flew We took off from Greenham Commons, England, at 12 o'clock at night of the morning of June 6th and landed in about 25 miles behind the coast, the front. So we were out of the real bad danger. We had a small arm fire, but we were carrying a Pathfinder group in, so we landed in a good area, and we were committed for 5 days, and we got out in 5 days. We were lucky. Of course, there's a lot of people going and coming from England, so you get on any boat or ship or whatever you want to call it to get out of there. When we landed, of course, we were committed just like the airborne. Matter of fact, they trained us. I don't think we were very good, but some of us lived. And it wasn't, as far as the glider pilots are concerned, D-Day wasn't bad. They lost some of them, but you lose them anyway on any invasion. That's part of the deal. I think our losses were about 79%.
79%.
I think that's the last report I had, yeah. We started out with 6,500, and I think there's less than 1,500 living now. But that didn't, the 6,500 weren't all glider pilots or glider mechanics and glider people.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll have more from Guy Gunter. Stay tuned. Warbird Radio presents The Guy Gunter Story. We'll continue right after this.
You're strapped in to Warbird Radio. Tune in to God.
Our thanks to Ezel Aviation for generously supporting Warbird Radio. To find out more, visit them online at EzelAviation.com. That's EzelAviation.com.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson of the RC Scale Builder Show. If you're interested in radio control scale modeling, you should check us out at rcscalebuilder.com. It's a great community that offers build threads, tips and tricks, aircraft walkarounds, free plans, and much more. You can find us at www.rcscalebuilder.com. Hope to see you there.
The RC Scale Builder Show, broadcast weekly, right here on Warbird Radio.
This is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
6 August, 1945. The day that changed the world.
This provoked a moral debate which endures until today.
Experience that debate.
I don't think that the decision to drop the atomic bomb on Japan was particularly controversial at the time.
You can moralize all you like, and you can bring in, 21st century rhetoric.
The revisionists wrote their side of the story.
They, of course, immediately began presenting themselves as the victim.
Yes, there was another way.
We would have had to invade Japan, and we would have lost a million men.
Pilots, generals, and scholars discuss The Atomic Dilemma, now playing on AeroCinema.com.
This is Warbird Radio.
Welcome back. On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we're visiting with World War II glider pilot Guy Gunter. Here now is the second half of our conversation. Reading something just yesterday, in fact, about World War II glider pilots, and it was showing in the training missions they were towing you guys up three in almost a diamond formation, three gliders in unison all going up. That had to be a heck of a thing to do when you were learning how to fly. I guess the goal was to get as many of you guys airborne as fast as they could and keep the training going.
Actually, flying a glider wasn't difficult. It's kind of like driving a truck. We didn't have any boosters or anything to help you lift the wings up, mm-hmm. nose and so forth. What you had to do is on takeoff is the most critical. You had to get the glider off first, and you had to get it slightly above the tail of the tow plane so the tow plane could get off. And once you were in the air, you kept out of the prop washer. It was just a piece of...
boxing the weight.
Yeah.
And
give us a piece of cake. Sicily, for example, we flew 4 hours that night, and the seas were really And we were actually splashing of water on the windshield of the gliders. We were flying real low, of course. And now that was a little difficult to fly. We had to light up the tail light of the Topolite with the rope on the glider. And that enabled us to stay in the proper position. That was the only way we had to do it.
So you line the light on the tail of the airplane up with the rope out in front of you, and that's how you stayed behind.
Yeah.
My goodness.
You line it up. And that was the most difficult one, I guess, I flew on. Mm. Rest of them were all right. Southern France was good. The only people in Southern France were about with the Vichy French. They didn't want to say us, so they were shooting at us. And Holland was great. We went in the daytime. Now they pulled two gliders to every tow plane there. Mm-hmm. We had 1,876 gliders into Holland. Mm-hmm. It was a very successful mission. Had Montgomery not been in charge of it, he fouled everything up. Mm-hmm. Left his glider pilots at airborne in Arnhem to be annihilated by the Germans. They pulled the tanks back. We were holding the bridge in the Graves, which is 14 miles away, I believe it was, from Arnhem. And the tanks came through our position, the British tanks, and turned around and came back and stopped in our position and had the tee. They said the airborne hadn't done the job. Somebody fired at them, so they came back and left them there to fight. And they did a fabulous job.
What was it like when you released that rope and you watched that tow plane fly away? Talk a little bit about that on some of these missions.
Well, your heart came up in your throat. You were scared, naturally. But you had a job to do. You had those troops behind. You had to get on the ground. You had to put yourself on the ground, so it wasn't that big a deal. The only thing was trying to find a place that you could land. You had the place, but, I mean, not have to... trying to keep out of the trees, away from the trees, or posts like in southern France. They put up anti-glider and anti-parachute posts. We landed between the posts. Sheared the wings off, stopped that forward motion.
Of course. Like a James Bond movie back then. They thought you had to do this.
We had a great time. We were young, didn't know any better. They gave us Benzedrine pills to take, and take a little scotch behind that, and you felt pretty good. You were invisible for about 48 hours.
And what did you do once the troops left the glider? What was your job after that?
You stayed with them. Or you
up.
Were dead.
Yeah.
You were part of the, you did the menial jobs for the paratroopers of the airborne. Now in Holland, we took all paratroopers. More, of course, paratroopers jumped before, and they took 2 miles of the highway that we went up on each side of the road and held it. And we were 45 miles from the front, so that was quite a mission from there. Yeah. 82nd Airborne I was with all the time. We had a good time. We were young, didn't know any better, wanted to fly, wanted to go overseas, thought we were doing the right thing. We thought we were doing something good for the country, and we did. We had made a lot of mistakes, but it worked out pretty good. See, the helicopters replaced the gliders. Before we had helicopters, the gliders were the only way to put 15 men fully armed, well armed, in one spot. Paratrooper, if you drop a stick of 9 paratroopers, you drop one at Peachtree to Cab, the last one to drop at 5 points if you're flying over this area. So you spread them over a long area, and they're not very effective for the individual.
What's your message to folks today who come up and ask you about this? What do you want folks to remember about all what you guys did back then?
Well, not what we did, what everybody did. We're all getting old now. Not too many of us left. I really don't need anything. They paid me. So I had a great time. I was doing what I thought was right. I've been fortunate. I'll be 92 June the 6th. By the way, invasion D-Day was on my birthday.
Happy birthday, then, right.
Thank
from Uncle Sam.
But all in all, it was... people should remember what a wonderful country this is, and we shouldn't let one individual, the president, not anyone in particular, but any president, ruin this country. And hopefully the people will stand up and start voting properly, realize what we have here now, and try to keep this. This is a great country, greatest country in the world. If you don't believe that, spend 3 years overseas. When you get back, you appreciate it.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for spending some time with me today. Thank I'm going to let you enjoy that Georgia sweet tea you're about to
partake
in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Guy.
That's all the time we have for this episode, but stay tuned. There's more Warbird Radio coming up right after this.